Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme.
Pauline Cox has a deep passion for health and nutrition. Her day-to-day work involves translating complex science into simple, easy-to-follow steps to make health information increasingly accessible. She's the author of the award-winning book, Primal Living in a Modern World, co-founder of High Street and online low-carb and keto specialist Sewn Arrow, and the co-founder of online health membership, My Health Mastery. And she joins us today for this week's episode of Things I Forgot Were Good For Me.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate you being here. There's so much I want to talk to you about, particularly primal living in the modern world, which is your first book, but then the concepts around that. But it's always interesting to hear people's journeys into things, their passions. So what sort of led you to this path? Well, first becoming a nutritionist, but obviously your particular sector of nutrition.
Well, that's an interesting question because like a lot of people who find themselves down a certain pathway, mine started with my own struggle and my own health issues, which is interesting because at the time I was working as a physiotherapist and in theory, I had a relative amount of knowledge around human science and physiology. And yet I was working very hard. I ran my own private practice. I was making what I thought were healthy food choices at the time, but actually these choices were really just making me increasingly tired, turning to more food choices, more sugar. I was calling it healthy sugar at the time, dates and power balls and, you know, all these foods disguised as healthy, but actually they were just driving my blood sugars crazy. It was really creating imbalances with my hormones and my gut health. And it got to the point where I was really very anemic. I was suffering from palpitations. I was just exhausted all the time. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm not on the right path. Maybe something's not quite right. And after taking so many medications, I just thought, this is not right. I'm in my late 20s. I'm at a time in my life where I should be full of energy and full of health and vitality. And it's a complete opposite. So it really sparked an interest in me starting to understand food as medicine and not just a form of fuel to get me through the day.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because I think our relationship with food and what we eat has become so kind of divorced from actually us understanding that whatever we put in our mouths actually is there to help our bodies or to not help our bodies. And when we go to the supermarket, you know, we see food wrapped in cellophane and it seems like it's not, you know, we haven't really got an idea about where it comes from, you know, what's in it, what it can do for us. And I don't know quite when that happened, when our relationship with food or our understanding of food kind of moved from when we used to, you know, go out and hunt it or go and grow it or whatever to being so much kind of just on a shelf and just there as something that we have to go and do once a week in order to sort of just put in our mouths and then get on with our lives. I'm not quite sure when that happened.
Yeah, I feel like it's because people are so busy these days and they see food as just a fuel or even as a form of self-medication, really. You know, we use food like caffeine and sugar and alcohol. We use these means to make us feel a certain way, to get us going in the morning, to calm us down in the evening. And food is something that we just take to energize us and then to get on with our busy lives. But as you said, Radha, it's so important that we understand the relationship with food. Food makes us, you know, food creates every single cell within our body is made from what we're eating and breathing and drinking. So, you know, food has this immense impact on our energy, the relationship we have with ourselves and others, our sleep, our illness, you know, our propensity for chronic health issues or how vital we're feeling. And I think if we put more emphasis on understanding the beauty and wonderfulness that food is and how it impacts our own health, then it becomes this really, really curious, exciting, interesting journey rather than I need to eat something and get going.
So when you sort of had this sort of moment of kind of, I guess, moment of discovery, it was a moment also that you, I guess, you had to start on a path of relearning everything. So you did some courses, I assume, at that point, did you? Was it a case of actually physically relearning stuff?
Yeah, I really did. I kind of threw out all the current kind of habits that I was having at the time, and I started again. So I came across the work of Dr. Terry Wall, who is an MD in America, and she has MS. And at the time, as a physio, you know, I had a real interest in neurodegenerative conditions, and she was a doctor who found herself progressively worsening. Now, she was under the best pharmaceutical care, the best neurological care, but she was progressively worsening. She was in a wheelchair, a recliner wheelchair. She was losing her dexterity, and she knew next thing to go would possibly be her cognitive function. So she took a year off work and decided to really look in depth at the cell, and particularly the mitochondria, which is the little battery within the cell, and what our cells need for really optimizing function, the different foods that provide all these different nutrients. And so she decided to radically change her diet and found within 18 months she was back cycling again and wow. had made incredible changes in her own health and thought, there's something in this, you know, there's a real reason behind how I've used this food to enhance and change my condition. And so she went to the MS Society. She was trying to get funding for research. And she was told actually at the time by the MS Society that she was being irresponsible and giving people hope. And being the trailblazer that she is, she said, no, this is not irresponsibility. This is actually trailblazing forward with something that could be helping people. And she had real scientific rationale behind what she was doing, impacting inflammatory levels, improving gut health, really giving the mitochondria the nutrients that it needed to do its job. So she carried on, she persisted, she managed to get some funding for research. And now, gosh, it must be 10 years on now, she has a huge, she's hugely respected in the world that she works in America. She's now hailed as a hero by the MS Society. She gets funding. I went over to meet her at the Functional Medicine Symposium a few years ago, and she'd just been given a $1.5 million grant for research in this area. And so she's making a huge difference in the food as medicine field in neurodegenerative conditions. So it made sense to me as a scientist. It really clicked with me, this approach of science-based understanding of food for medicine. So I went and studied for a master's in nutrition and public health and completely changed my approach to eating, focused on blood sugar stabilizing, the impact food has on our hormones, the impact hormones have on our overall health, gut healing, liver function, what our brain needs, how our mood is impacted by inflammation. You know, this is not fringe science. This is steeped in science. And I think when we start to see the impact of what we're eating and how we're living on our mental well-being and our physical health, it all just makes sense.
Mm. And it's fascinating what you say, because I think in the last sort of 3, 4, 5 years, I think there's been much more of a widespread conversation around food as medicine, around food, using food as a tool. And it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, we probably knew that a long, long time ago. You know, we you know, when we grew our own vegetables, or we kind of, you know, we had our ownership over what we were eating or what we were growing and what we were putting into our bodies, we probably had a bit more of a sense of that. But I think over the last 3 or 4 years, it's become a lot more now mainstream, a lot more talked about, and a kind of a little bit in that realm of what we call, I suppose, lifestyle medicine, which is kind of incorporates so many different things, like you say, food, sleep, all those kind of things. And yet it seems so intuitive, doesn't it? It seems like we've almost kind of forgotten about it, but now relearned those kind of really, really basic things.
Absolutely. I think we've almost separated ourselves from nature. And I think when we start living more congruently with nature, you know, seeing food as something wonderful that's coming from the earth, and we're putting all of those nutrients inside our body, being outdoors more, sleeping, as you mentioned, sleep is incredibly important for our overall health, mental health, hormone stability, weight status, even how we breathe. You know, I've researched so many different areas, not just food, but lifestyle medicine, as you say, the importance of breathing correctly and the impact that has on our blood pressure and our oxygen levels, on our mental well-being. These are all things that are very simple and fundamental to our overall health. And yet we don't necessarily put the importance on them. And when we start to get symptoms of ill health, we look to try and suppress those symptoms or manage those symptoms rather than taking a few steps back, and saying, well, how am I eating and how am I sleeping? Am I getting outdoors enough? How's my gut microbiome? And how's my liver functioning? Am I kind of working against my body, or am I working with its needs?
I'm also interested in your journey, actually, because obviously you were, you know, had a very scientific background. You had a very scientific mind. And I always find it fascinating how we all hear things in different ways. So myself included, if there's something I want to change, a habit I want to kind of modify, or something I'm really interested in finding out more about, it's often that curiosity, but it's also about how we all learn and we all hear things in different ways, and how we all need different methods, I think, of hearing different messages. So, you know, sometimes when I've been interested in something, you know, I'll go onto YouTube and something will pop up, and a certain person and a certain way they talk about something will really resonate with me. Whereas someone else could be saying something totally the same, but it won't necessarily align with what I think or how I think. And it strikes me that your curiosity and your sort of scientific background obviously led you to meeting that incredible physician in America. I just wonder what it was like for you to actually meet her in person, because, you know, when you've read a lot about somebody, you admire them, they've really helped you kind of change something in your life. What was it like actually meeting her?
It was incredible, actually, that whole experience of, you know, having someone's work be so influential over not just my health, but now my career. You know, I completely changed the direction I was working in, and you know, I now have the privilege of being able to help many other people through my own learning and my struggle, sort of turned into this ability to help others with their struggles. And so I heard a very scientific presentation from her and her colleagues at that symposium. But one of the things I love to do is to make that science really accessible, Radha. And I think it's really important in this sort of day and age where we're bombarded with information. I'm sure you guys hear so many different takes on diet and nutrition and what we should be eating, what we shouldn't be eating. I mean, it's there every day. One day we shouldn't eat eggs, the next day we should. One day meat is bad, the next day we should be eating meat. I think it's so important when people are bombarded with this landscape of information that there's some way of translating what is happening in science to a form that people can hear, and that meat isn't good or bad. It's where meat comes from, and is it right for you? And the same with eggs, and it's the same with all dietary approaches. We're not all the same. We have similar physiological requirements, but we have a different age and sex and hormonal imbalances and past medical history and all these things that have an influence on what we specifically need at this point in our lives. And when people, you know, recognize that hearing something, it's good to hear a wide range of opinions, but to not get too confused and fixated on one person's opinion, but to really enjoy their own journey and see it as kind of me-search, really, rather than just all research-based, but what feels good to me and what feels right to me and what am I enjoying in my own journey. And I think that takes the stress out of it a little bit, because food should be enjoyable and pleasurable and delicious. And, you know, it brings so much joy to us.
I love food. I absolutely love food. It's one of my favourite things. That and sleep and a bath are like three of my favourite things in the entire world. But I also love reading about me search, because I think we all, although we don't know the science or the technicalities of it all at all, and I certainly don't, but I know that when I eat something, it either makes me feel good or it doesn't. And I know when I haven't eaten well, because I don't feel well in myself. So I think sometimes we can make it so complex, and actually it does sometimes come down to that intuition, that feeling into yourself of actually, how do I feel after I've eaten that? What are my energy levels like? What's my vitality like? And kind of really tapping into that and starting to learn a bit more about yourself.
I completely agree. And I think that intuitive eating is really, really important. And it's actually really hard to eat intuitively when you're stuck in a world of sugar cravings and food addiction, or you're using food as a tool to get you through the day. When we take a step back and start eating slightly differently, even if it's just adding in some more vegetables and improving the choices we're making, the quality of the food, and kind of just cutting out some of the more processed foods, it allows your body to speak to you. Those little whispers become a bit more clear. So, oh, this works for me, this doesn't work for me. When we're eating foods that aren't really congruent with our gut health and our physiology, it becomes really hard to hear those whispers of this doesn't feel so good, because our bodies are being bombarded all the time with foods that just aren't quite right for us. So I love intuitive eating. I think it's especially, and Giles, you might not be able to click necessarily with this one, but as women, you know, we don't have a 24-hour hormone cycle. We have a 28-day cycle. And so we have these changes throughout the month that mean we have different needs. You know, sometimes we need a little bit more carb in our diet. Sometimes we eat less. Sometimes we need more magnesium and more iron. And so when we're eating intuitively, we can use that intuition, what our body's needing during those different times of the month, to eat, you know, a bit more dark chocolate or have a little bit more egg or protein in our diet. And that intuitive eating, I think, works really well with those cyclical changes.
Moving on from that, actually, on that subject, you know, ancestral diets, and you've talked a bit about carbs, and obviously there's more of a premise towards low carb diets now being better for you. What on that practical level, what kind of things should we be introducing more into our diets and taking away? I know, like, grains obviously can be damaging as well, too many. So from a practical point of view, what kind of things can we be doing if we're starting on a new journey with our diets? What kind of things can we start to introduce?
Yeah, that's a great question, Giles. I think there's this misconception that, you know, carbs are bad for us and we need to cut carbs, but it's actually the amount of carbs that we're having that can be really problematic. We find ourselves in this situation where we're constantly consuming carbs. We've kind of become chronic carb consumers. We're having breakfast cereals or porridge, maybe an oat bar at mid-break. Lunchtime could be a panini or a sandwich with some crisps, and then pasta, rice. You know, we have a lot of refined carbohydrates in our diet, which if we're coupling that with a sedentary lifestyle, we're not getting the best sleep, we're maybe drinking some alcohol and having lots of stress in our life, these are all things that are driving our blood sugars up, which then is followed by an increase in insulin, which has many negative impacts on the body, resulting in this situation called insulin resistance, which means our blood sugars creep up and then they get converted into fat within the liver or on the body. So when we're looking at carbs, we don't want to just label them as all bad guys, because, you know, vegetables are a very rich source of carbohydrates and a fantastic source of carbohydrates. And our gut needs all that wonderful fiber to really benefit and you know, to survive and proliferate. So I think one of the things that we can look at is becoming a bit more conscious of carbs and a bit more choosy when it comes to the type of carbs we're having. particularly if someone finds themselves in a situation where they may be struggling with weight or maybe struggling with energy, they might be finding themselves on that borderline of being pre-diabetic, and they're looking to improve their health. So they could start looking at, okay, I'm going to just cut down on some of my wheat-based products or my cereals, and I'm going to have a few more quality protein, leafy vegetables, fermented vegetables, colorful vegetables, some healthy fats like avocado and olives and olive oil, all the things that we know are really important for creating that platform of health, particularly our healthy fats, because they form the backbone of all our hormones as well.
I was just making a little list of that, actually. Mm. I can see Giles doing the same thing.
I am. I'm writing loads of notes. What I'm going to do for
It's what Giles is going to cook for me when I next see him, isn't it, Giles?
Yeah, you're getting avocados and egg.
That sounds perfect to me. As you were talking there, I just got a real sense of, or a real reminder, actually, of how fun food is. And I know it sounds maybe a bit odd, and maybe we speak more about that to children and kind of young people about that, to encourage them to get interested in nutrition and when they're cooking and learning how to cook, etc. But I think as adults, and I've been guilty of this, there's a real danger, isn't there, I think, about making food functional, like we were saying before, and forgetting that actually it's really fun, that actually it can be really sociable. And, you know, we tend to enjoy food with other people most of the time. We tend to, you know, we can love cooking and getting into our kitchens and starting to be creative. So there's a lot of fun and creativity and social aspects to food and nutrition as well, isn't there?
Absolutely, 100%. And you know what? I think people sometimes just get a little bit paralyzed by, I don't know what I'm making, I don't know what to do. And we've had this whole probably decade now of wonderful cookery programs like MasterChef and showing all these incredible culinary delights. And maybe we just have forgotten the art of super simple cooking, because I'm really busy, but I love getting in the kitchen and I have a veg box delivered, a meat box and a salad box. So I love unpacking my boxes and then sort of just like on my Instagram stories today, I took out some kale and I had some broccoli and I had some gorgonzola in the fridge and I have some bean pasta, because I don't use wheat pasta, but I love the protein in bean pasta. So I just sort of looked at them and thought, right, what can I make with this? Let's get a bit creative. I have 20 minutes. Let's cook something. So I sorted up the kale, sorted some onions, and then I blitzed it in my food processor with a bit of coconut yogurt to make a pesto and covered the pasta and then had a bit of steamed broccoli. But it doesn't have to be perfect. It's more about, as you say, having fun and seeing these amazing colors come to life as you steam broccoli and smelling and using our senses. You know, when we just buy a sandwich on the way to work, you don't get that amazing benefit of preparing and seeing where your food's come from. You don't get your senses stimulated, which has a really beneficial impact on our gastric juices preparing us for food. We tend to eat quickly at our desk, rather than sitting and mindfully enjoying the flavors, the textures, and really thinking about these amazing nutrient-dense foods that are going into building us, to building our skin and our bones and our neurotransmitters. You know, these are the building blocks of our day-to-day life. And so even though I'm really busy, I always try and put aside planning, whether it's 7 o'clock in the morning, putting things into my slow cooker, or sorting up a quick stir fry or something at lunchtime, I always try and put aside time for food and make it a priority, because I know how important it is for my mental well-being, my hormones, my day-to-day life, my relationship with myself, but also with my children and my family as well.
Mm, yeah, and we've spoken about, in our first series, we had an amazing guest, Mom Taz, who was talking about the power of colour on our well-being. And as you were talking about food there, I was like visualizing red peppers and all these amazing pigments and colors and brightness and textures and smells. And, you know, I think there is such a lot of food is really art as well, isn't it? That's why we all love pictures of food. Also, because, you know, I love food.
Absolutely.
Anyway, but food is beautiful. You know, like you say, it's something to be admired and something to, if you look at a pepper and a pear and all these different things, you're like, wow, how are these things so different? And they've all been created by nature so perfectly, from a seed or from whatever else. How incredible is that? And I think it maybe also inspires a sense of wonder as well, which we sometimes forget about. You know, we're like, oh, there's a pear, there's a pepper. If you show a child that for the first time, they'll be like, oh, what's this? I'll look at it. They'll kind of touch it. They might try and taste it. We just take it for granted. So I think that sense of perspective and of wonderment about actually what nature provides, I think, is also something which I forget about, and actually I probably will try and go when I'm cooking dinner later to actually inspire me to remember that a bit more tonight.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. You know, I remember 6 or 7 months ago, a lovely lady came up to me in the supermarket. She must have been in her 80s, and she just put her hand on my hand at the checkout and said, "Isn't it wonderful, dear?" And I said, "What's that?" And she said, "That we can buy tomatoes in the middle of winter."
Yeah.
And you know, it's so true, isn't it? We take for granted the availability of these amazing fruits and salads and vegetables that we can have all year round. And yet, maybe 40 years ago, you had what you had and you appreciated that, but we've almost become a bit desensitized to the incredible rainbow of fruits and vegetables in front of us. But I do think there's been a new appreciation. I think there are people now looking at food differently and seeing it for what it is, this incredible source of, as you said, phytonutrients and the brightly colored pigments, how they directly impact our health. Even specific phytonutrients like the flavonoids in pomegranates, for example, specifically feed a gut bacteria that helps to improve the gut lining and the membrane. You know, there are these amazing symbiotic relationships we have with the food we eat and how well we function and how healthy we are, that I think as people start to become inspired and in awe of how incredibly impactful food can be on our health and well-being, it creates this new sense of respect for food and the food we eat.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Your book Primal Living in the Modern World is brilliant, and it's got lots of great recipes in it, but also lots of really great information as well, which I'm sure is what, you know, you were trying to convey. But for someone, you know, we've sort of spoken about it a little bit about starting out and finding the right foods for you, but if you are someone that's starting out now, would it be advisable, I guess, to take sort of baby steps into this? Because I guess, it's quite a big lifestyle change to go from, you know, like you said, we're in a modern world where food is very convenient. Yeah, would it be advisable to take baby steps, maybe even keeping like a food diary or something like that? Would that be an advisable thing?
Yeah, I think that's a really nice approach, Giles. I feel like anything that we want to create as a long-term change, it's nice to do it step by step. And I've always felt with this way of eating, it's almost reverting back to 30, 40 years ago, where we are just eating vegetables, meat, fruit. We naturally intermittently fasted back then because, you know, when I was a child growing up in the 80s, we stopped eating at 6 o'clock and that was it. Like, food's over now until the next day. And that's, again, another really beneficial way of living, is having periods of eating and having periods of not eating, because in our fasted state, our body is very different to in a fed state. And so it's almost just reverting back to the basics. It doesn't have to be super complex, or, you know, I like to replace some of the pastas with bean pasta and some of the breads with seeded flours rather than wheat flours. But that's a modern convenience we have. Ultimately, you could start by just adding in more fermented foods like sauerkraut and kimchi, kombucha drinks and beet kvass, even apple cider vinegar. There are some amazing traditional fermented foods that are making a huge resurgence because of their huge benefits on our gut bacteria and the gut diversity. So I would say, you know, just start looking at, what am I eating, and can I simplify it? You know, having my quality protein, it doesn't have to be meat every day. I eat meat probably 3 to 4 times a week, but I know where my meat comes from. And then lots of vegetables. I'm a huge fan of cruciferous vegetables, again, particularly for ladies, because it has a really big impact on our hormone stability. So cruciferous and green leafy vegetables, maybe starting to have a veg box delivery or visiting your local fruit and veg shop and your local butcher. So just maybe changing shopping habits so you know where your food's coming from and you have a new appreciation for seasonal veg and seasonal fruit and local meat. I think it really comes down to changing habits, and that inspires you to want to change more. And as you become more kind of involved in this way of life, you want to learn more, you want to understand more. And that's what I found with a lot of the people who I've worked with over the last 3 or 4 years since opening So An Arrow, really, is that once people take a step down this pathway and they realize, wow, I can have such a big impact on the way I feel through what I'm eating, they then start to live differently. And then they start doing things they never thought they'd start doing, like cold water swimming or taking up cycling, or, they're doing these things that they thought they would never do, but it's because they've really opened up their mind and really shattered those limiting beliefs.
I think you raise a, sorry. Oh, sorry. Sorry as well. Sorry, Giles, hope you can edit out.
That's fine.
You raise a really interesting point there, I think, because we're talking about an individual who's making changes, who's, doing something for their own well-being. But actually, once they do start doing things like that, there are benefits for the whole community, aren't there? There are benefits for the environment as well. So if we're growing more of our own food and vegetables, if we're going down to our allotment or we're getting involved in gardening or whatever it might be in the local community, we're sharing veg boxes, we're shopping more locally, then actually that has a huge impact on the community, on nature. So there are so many kind of ripple impacts, I suppose, ripple effects, not just for ourselves, but on everybody. And the other thing I think, which is really important to think about and talk about with this topic, is emotions and feelings, because with any habit change, and this is why I get so frustrated with diet programs, in inverted commas, on TV, because they always just focus on the actual food, but none of them really ever focus on the emotional patterns, the emotional habits that we have around food. And also just how fundamental it is for us to really get that emotional awareness of when we're eating, what we're eating, why we're eating, because that's the basis of any kind of meaningful habit change, isn't it? Why do you think in our conversation on so many sort of media platforms, do we not talk about emotions and food? Why do we always just jump to the outcome as opposed to actually really dealing with actually what's the cause sometimes of perhaps our difficulty or challenges in making better decisions for ourselves?
I think that's a fantastic question. And I've often wondered that myself. And I think it's because of our obsession with shortcuts and instant results. I think we like to see rapid transformations and we like to see a really impressive before and after. And we forget that actually a big part of this process is the journey and what we're learning as we go along. And as humans, we tend to shy away from emotional pain and physical pain. And in order to seek pleasure, we use food. It's a very, very quick way to change our physiology. It's one of the most overutilized drugs, but underutilized forms of medicine. And so we use food to make us feel a certain way. It can rapidly increase our dopamine levels and it can become highly addictive. And that's often because we're trying to hide and run away from some sort of emotional pain. And I found, interestingly, that as people go down this pathway of becoming just more conscious of where they're at with life, just first of all, figuring out, how am I actually feeling? Why am I doing this? Why do I want to change the way I'm eating? And I always ask people, when I'm consulting with people, I'll say, why do you want to do this? Oh, I want to get into a certain dress. No, but why do you really want to do this? It's not about getting into a dress. Where do you see yourself in a year's time? Where do you see yourself in 10 years time, when you're 100 or you're 95? Because if we can think about seeing that very strong vision of us being healthy and vibrant and living in this joyful state, it's a very powerful, compelling vision that we can start to work towards. And I think if people have that strong why, it really helps them to make that lasting, sustainable change. But they also have to start to address the emotional pain that they might have been through. And rather than fighting that pain, accepting, I've been through a really difficult time, I might have had a challenging divorce or a challenging illness in my family, or just a really difficult time with anxiety and COVID. But facing those emotionally challenging areas and then finding ways to help to cope with them. And that could be different forms of different strategies. For me, it was cold water swimming. And again, it's an interesting way of coping, but the pain that you get from cold water swimming, it's a really interesting activity, because when you submerge yourself in very, very cold water, you get this initial feeling of pain, but then it goes. And then after you finish the cold water swim, you come out and you feel incredibly calm and rejuvenated. And the research I did around cold water swimming, it said exactly that. It helps to recalibrate your nervous system, and it really helps you to, it helps your brain to focus on not running away from pain, be that physical or emotional pain, but to embrace it and embrace all forms of pain. And that helps us as humans to not use other means that might not be so good for our health to mask pain and seek pleasure.
Mm. There's a, sorry, Charles.
It's all good, don't worry.
There's a similarity there, actually. When I started to practice yin yoga a few years ago, and it was a really interesting style of yoga, because it's something where you basically hold a posture for maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes, and it's supposed to be more for your connective tissue as opposed to for your muscles. But it's an interesting process, because actually holding that position and feeling some level of discomfort or being more aware of your emotions when you're holding that position for a very, very long time, I think is very similar in that you're starting to learn tolerance for discomfort. Yes. And tolerance to be with your feelings as opposed to running away from them or pushing them aside. It sounds very similar to what you're saying about cold water swimming.
Yes, and I think with the world that we live in at the moment, and especially for the younger generation growing up, we're almost teaching them that we don't need to feel pain or emotional pain, that we can kind of blank it out with screens and phones and distractions, and actually having conversations where we broach emotionally challenging situations and we talk openly about things that we've gone through that have hurt us or why we're feeling a certain way, and not just constantly distract ourselves from things that feel uncomfortable or that feel painful, emotionally painful.
Yeah, no, I think that's so true. It's something we try and address with our two children quite a lot, you know, to talk about those really difficult moments, and because we will go through them, and you want to make sure that they have some resistance. I just want to go back to the intermittent fasting thing, because yes. That's something I've been practicing for quite a while. Kind of initially, I didn't realise I was practicing. You know, it was one of those things where I didn't have breakfast and I didn't eat anything before 6. And it wasn't until I started talking to some other people that were practicing it. I was like, oh, I'm actually doing that. But it's I'm interested in what it does to your physicality, because I think it certainly creates a high level of alertness.
Yes.
And concentration, but I guess also it gives your body that time to process those big, particularly for most people, we eat a big meal in the evenings.
Yeah, no, it's really a powerful way. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't take any extra effort. And it's something that a lot of people, obviously, if it's appropriate for you, if you're type 1 diabetic, you might not want to practice yeah. long periods of fasting. But you know, there's a really nice window that we can create of about 8 hours for eating, and then having this period of being in a fasted state. So when we're eating, whenever we eat, it has an impact on our blood sugars, you know, depending on what we eat, whether it's sugar, fructose, or something that really has a high glycemic index, and it causes our blood sugars to rise up quite high and rapidly. And then that has a subsequent insulin impact. So, it has an impact on our physiology. Protein has less of an impact, and then fat has even less of an impact. So when we're eating from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, our blood sugars never really get to that point, because when you've eaten, it takes maybe 3, sometimes 4 hours to come back into that fasted state where our blood sugars have really come back down to a sort of the level of being pre-eating or being fasted. But if we're eating every 2 to 3 hours, we're never really getting to that point where we can take advantage of this dual fuel burner state we have. So we can use glucose for fuel, but we can also use fat for fuel. And I'm not necessarily talking about chowing down on a stick of butter. I mean, we can use the fat that's stored on our body. And this ability to use the fat on our body gave us a huge evolutionary advantage, as our hunter-gatherer ancestors would have gone days, possibly even longer, without eating as they were seeking out food. And so our body carries food around with it like a larder. And then when we need food, our body can break down this fat and produce something called ketones, which are these metabolically incredible compounds that can cross the blood-brain barrier and fuel our brain. They're exactly what you mentioned, Giles. They give you that alertness, that clarity, particularly if someone has a little bit of insulin resistance, which is really common because of our kind of chronic carb consumption. We don't just get insulin resistance in our body cells, we also get insulin resistance in the brain. And so blood sugars, glucose struggles to get into these neurons to fuel them. And so we can get this kind of brain foggy state, we can get this lack of focus, this lack of coordination, this lack of even depressive states. And then when we have something like ketones that don't need a transporter to get into the neurons, they literally are pushed into the neurons rather than being demanded, which glucose is. It can really help with mental clarity and alertness and focus. It has a wonderful benefit on other areas of the body as well. It's anti-inflammatory. It's a very stable source of fuel. And you're accessing body fat, you're accessing fat that's stored in the liver, which is fantastic. So we're helping to get that hepatic fat out, so improving liver function. We're getting rid of some of the adipose, so the visceral fat, the dangerous fat around the belly area. So we're allowing our body to become fat burners as well as using glucose for fuel. And that's one of the really key benefits of fasting, is we're lowering our blood sugars to a normal level. We're bringing insulin levels down, which is absolutely key because insulin blocks fat burning. So as our insulin levels come down and our body is getting into this point of feeling like, well, I need to eat something, we feed ourselves through accessing this fat on our body and burning that for fuel.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's a tool that so few of us use, because when we're sugar burners, i.e. we just rely on carbs and glucose all the time, you know, you may know what it's like. You have something like porridge or cereal or a bar of something, and then within 2 hours you're like, I'm hungry again. What happened there?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're constantly grazing. And when we're relying on glucose for fuel all the time, our blood sugars are just going up and up because our insulin sensitivity becomes less. Then we start gaining more weight, and then visceral fat has a big impact on our overall health. So there's this whole cascade of, it's like the perfect storm for metabolic health to start going wrong. But as we start to make these small changes, like creating a window for eating more vegetables and having more blood stabilizing foods like protein and healthy fats and less of the refined carbs, we can make radical improvements on our health at any age. You know, our bodies are incredibly forgiving, particularly our livers.
And see, Giles, you didn't even know you were doing it. You were doing all that. You didn't even know it.
I know. It's great when you do things by accident and they have health benefits. It's amazing.
Now, this podcast is obviously all about the things I forgot were good for me. So when it comes to nutrition and what we eat, what would be your message out there for people listening about what we might have forgotten or what they might have forgotten that might be good for them to remember?
I think coming back to just eating with nature, looking at colourful vegetables in your local fruit and vegetable shop or market, and seeing these amazing colourful peppers and broccoli and beetroots and these gifts from nature for us, and knowing that eating those has this amazing health benefit to us. And it doesn't have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be complicated. It's these simple gifts grown in the earth, grown on the earth, roaming the earth, that we take and we get this amazing benefit from. And it's all part of the life cycle. And that leads to better sleep and being outdoors more, having an appreciation for being in nature. It's like this domino effect. And I feel like when we start eating better, because eating well is a form of self-respect, it allows us to start making those better choices, those choices that really are part of our values that are good for us, like sleeping more, like having quality sleep, like spending time with friends and family, being outdoors, appreciating what we have around us and not focusing on what we don't have and the fear. So it would just be to focus on that appreciation of the foods that are just gifts from Mother Nature to us and that we get so much pleasure out of, but also so much health from too.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, thank you so much, Pauline. Yeah. It's been so fascinating to talk to you. I've learned so much today and gonna be starting
yeah
to
same
do
here cooking, right? Inspired me.
Yeah, some bean pasta. I'm gonna get some bean pasta.
Giles is actually gonna cook for me. That's what you're gonna do, Giles.
How can you cook?
Am I okay?
I'm coming.
No pressure.
Thank you guys, thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed this. It's a pleasure talking to you both.
And you, thank you.
Another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.